Matt Ryan during his December 1st COVID-19 briefing. Quote, this is me sounding the alarm bell that we are now definitely going to have a worse second.
Yeah, what are you doing?
We're projecting our voices through the microphone.
What for?
To come in contact with your ear, and then you come back in contact with ours again.
Okay, but can you play some music?
No way.
Hi, I'm Rachel T.
Hi, I'm Eva.
Hi, I'm Rachel G.
We are all Girl Scouts, and this is WGXC ACRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michael Murray of Cairo, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Wave Farms WGXC needs your financial support. In these extraordinary and unprecedented times, we know there are many worthy.
Hello and welcome to the Thingularity Radio Program, broadcasting live from the secret Canadian snow storage facility and, thanks to COVID restrictions, doubling as a reptilian cloning facility. How is everybody doing tonight?
All right.
Corey.
I'm feeling positively replaced.
Replaced?
What?
By a reptilian.
Oh.
Of course.
Well, should we expect,
name's still Cody, but, you know.
Slower response tonight due to the cold-blooded nature of your body now?
Oh, no, it's very warm inside my incubator.
And what kind of reptile person are you?
What?
What kind of reptile person are you if you're warm-blooded?
He said cold-blooded.
Well, I'm in an incubator, so it's fine.
Well, eat a couple of guinea pigs. That should help you. It worked in me.
So what do? Do they replace you, like, limb by limb? Or, like, is it a DNA
Do you
thing?
Know what happened when you were born? I mean, what makes you think it wouldn't be the same for a reptilian coming out of its egg?
Oh, you see, for a human conversion, I hear they go into the anus.
Probing is a myth.
That's not just probing, son.
Yeah, all they learned from it was that 1 in 10 likes it.
Well, that's all you need to know about humans. We'll leave it at that.
How are you doing, Corey?
For the listeners, Jill is hiding her face, but you can't see it because this isn't a video medium. But it's absolutely
priceless. We don't do
priceless.
Video for the listeners. This is just so that we know when one of us is on fire to not, you know, go to them.
We often spontaneously combust during the show.
So, if that got you listeners saying WTF, we've got something else that's got astronomers saying WTF.
Nice segue.
Or at least one or two astronomers locked in some basement somewhere.
or in their observatory. So
observatory is a basement.
In September 2019, an astronomer named Anna Kapinska gave a presentation showing some interesting objects that she had found while browsing some radio astronomy data. And they're very strange shapes, almost like ghosts or clouds, maybe, say, orbs. And they couldn't fit any known object. Huh? What was that?
Did you say ghosts?
You know, when you see, when you take a picture and it seems like there's like a ghost image.
So she was looking at a machine, right?
I'm sorry, what?
Never mind.
A machine? Yeah. Well, when you're looking at data, it's just, it's not visually represented, but when you start to map it out, when you start to map it out, it doesn't correspond to any sort of known object.
Alright, so what you're saying is these bits of data that they have tried to map out over the sky are looking like weird shapes, weird ghostly shapes.
Right. That is correct. There's like a circle of radio emission that hangs in the middle of space unexplained.
Okay, now, is this the elusive dark matter?
No,
because dark matter, it's not dark because it's dark because it doesn't interact electromagnetically, which would be from the entire spectrum of radiation from gamma to radio waves.
Interesting.
So it's dark matter.
It's not dark. It's lit up like a Christmas tree.
Supposedly.
Okay.
It's a mystery to these people. They don't know. They don't know what it is. They don't know if it's an imaging artifact,
alien?
Software error in the software they use to analyze the data.
Pan-galactic interdimensional beings leaking into our dimension.
You know, you're throwing these things out there, but they make a whole lot of assumptions.
So does this entire story in the well, the story doesn't make any assumptions. It just says there's something there, which opens the door for assumptions because there's pretty much nothing else to
fill. It opens the door for hypotheses.
Cool. And they're just radio waves, as far as we know. It's a big cloud of them.
They don't know what it is. And it's not, I guess it's not really radio waves. It's something that is, if it really is something out there, it's something that is reflective of radio waves. They're sources of radio emission that were heretofore undiscovered and so far, but gone unexplained.
So potentially there's some unknown process that could just be exciting the particles in a very large cloud to emit radio waves like a glow?
Potentially.
Cool. So floating Dyson sphere.
I know we have a lot of amateur astronomers here in the county and the surrounding area, so maybe they might find that interesting. Something deserving of a worthwhile exploration.
Yes,
investigation.
They've been doing virtual star parties too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the Hudson Valley astronomers. Or
is that the group based out of Troy?
I think there's two that's local, or somewhat local, and then you know,
local is a relative term here.
Yeah, it's a relative term within 30 or 40 miles.
Right.
Everybody's a local,
but then they go.
Nobody's a local.
And they go to Alana at least yearly. Oh. And this dude tricked out his Volkswagen Rabbit like Starship Enterprise. It's awesome. But yeah, they meet like
I assume
many,
you
many
know
places.
This because you've been.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
It's the first time I saw one of those laser pointers that you could just point to the sky and go, "Hey, look, there's the ISS."
That sounds dangerous. Yeah, well, what if you blind one of the astronauts?
I don't think it reaches that far.
Which you could hit a pilot and be arrested for that.
Could,
only but dangerous if a giant space cat starts chasing it. So.
The Saiyan cat descends from the skies chasing them.
Sorry to disrupt your story.
No.
No, I was basically done.
No, that one's over with. Space ghosts. Ghosts in the machine are bugging astronomers buried in basements.
That's cosmic smoke. That. Cosmic smoke rings, if you will.
Yay. Moving along, do we have another story, Joe?
Me?
Yeah.
Well.
Something to change topics, because that last one was quite, you know.
France bans citizens from filming and identifying violent police officers. You can't do that anymore.
Do Sorry. They wear body cams?
I don't know.
Can the state like press charges against... Well, can the police officers press charges against themselves for filming themselves performing violent acts?
There's... If you film a police officer, it's punishable by a year in jail and a 45,000 euro fine for filming, posting, and identifying police officers.
Remember, police officers always get special dispensation for the use of equipment, and they're basically allowed to just break the law to do their job so that they can catch people that are breaking the law.
You know, they disperse people with tear gas and, you know, lots of homeless people.
They're the cops that we pay for.
This is not what I expected from France, which is, I don't know, I'm kind of shocked by it. And Macron is saying that there's, I don't know, he doesn't see the problem with it.
I mean, why would he? He's the head of state, no?
Yeah.
Well, I guess you could say it's a result of the creeping fascism that's also going on in Europe, which is tied into Brexit as well, so...
Yeah, well, monkey see, monkey do. Our fascist is out, so hopefully they start to have a decline, too. Oops. Wrong topic for the show.
I mean, France goes through this sort of stuff periodically through the ages, where its populace gets fed up, and then, you know, there's two sides that form. Yeah, there's
it all depends
two violent sides.
Invading them. Right now it's refugees. Before it was Germans. Before that it was Moors. I don't know. So
just, well, they didn't. They didn't need an invader for the revolutions of 1780. You know.
No, because when you don't have an exterior enemy to deal with long enough, you start fighting yourselves.
Well, you were. They were too busy giving us money, so that we could fight against the English, who'd been like, they'd been. Centuries-long enemies, so anything to defeat the English was good for France, but it wasn't that great for France. And then, you know, they blamed it, of course, on, you know, Marie Antoinette, because she was German and stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
This sounds dangerously like history.
Doesn't it?
Well, you let me talk! I'm going to talk about history, sorry.
No, history and not the history of any sort of technology or anything cool. So,
no, well, then you guys bring on something else.
Let's see.
Well, bring it back to technology. That's when the guillotine came out, so.
There you go. Now, that technology that was introduced by a doctor.
And the wonderful science they conducted was holding up someone's head and yelling into their ear to see if they were still alive. After being decapitated.
Blake wants for yes.
Well, they would like kind of look over and then a good minute. You're still alive.
Yeah, did anybody respond?
I think I've heard like a second.
Yeah, they would respond by like, you know, like looking you in the eyes and stuff. And trying to like move their mouths, but you know, you can't.
Brought Herbert West in.
It's just, there was good evidence that you're still alive, so it wasn't necessarily
It wasn't that instant. You had like a minute or so of absolute horror being disembodied. Cool! Alright, now that's technology.
So, while we're on the topic of special dispensations for law enforcement,
Oh, this is a dark road. Let's go.
I have an article where the Supreme Court is ruling, will be ruling soon, if they haven't already, I'm not sure, on a controversial U.S. hacking law that's been on the books since the 80s. It's the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
Okay.
And the case that they're hearing came up after a Georgia police officer got caught taking a bribe to look up a woman from a strip club in the police database. The man who paid the bribe wanted to make sure that this woman was not an undercover. But what this Georgia cop didn't know was that guy who bribed him was working with the FBI.
Okay, so the FBI did a sting, caught a cop trying to look up data for a friend, which he obviously shouldn't have been doing.
Well, yeah. Which supposedly isn't against... well, they've argued that it's not actually against federal law to take a bribe and then in exchange for accessing this confidential information. It is against his department's policy and this, and his state's law. And now this cop's lawyers are arguing that he didn't exceed his authorized access according to the letter of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
Now, interesting. If that's the case, then what I'm hearing is the access granted to the individual by the system itself, the computer system that he logged into, if that was set up to allow him access, then he has authorization, right?
This is what they're going to decide.
Now,
this is what it's coming down to.
I'm kind of curious how that would apply to the cheat functions on popular online video games, because people are being arrested for producing those, too. Now, if the computer system allows you to have access to those functions, then you are authorized, and I don't see where they would have a legal ground to complain.
Well, what's become, you know, for another wrinkle in all this, what you're describing is going against the terms of service of a publicly accessible, or, you know that there's different barriers of entry to getting into a technical system, like a database or whatever, right? Like, you have different levels of authorization, different levels of access given to different people.
Yeah.
Well, do you remember Aaron Schwartz, the guy who dumped basically all of JS Store, and then he committed suicide while being imprisoned?
Nope.
Heard the name.
Name is familiar, but I don't remember the story.
He scraped academic papers from science journals.
Okay, so he downloaded a whole bunch of
the MIT guy
textbooks and put them up for free.
That's correct.
All right, and then
they prosecuted him under the same act. Now, he had access, just like what is described for this cop.
Yes, he was granted access to those documents, which means
he simply did not
do whatever he wanted with them.
He didn't follow the terms under which he was allowed access.
So this is boiling down to whether the terms of service is valid compared to the actual amount of access that a system gives you.
What I'm telling you is that the Department of Justice and the courts have ruled that if you do violate the terms of service and access, then yeah, that's a crime. But now, the Supreme Court has never decided on that. So now they're going to decide whether or not that's true. You understand? The highest court in the land will decide whether or not you have to abide by the terms of service or not.
Interesting.
Isn't it? And isn't it interesting that now the Department of Justice, which had previously prosecuted cases, is now defending this cop on that same basis?
Oh, I wonder why. So they don't have any integrity. They'll argue whatever they're getting paid to argue. Lovely.
If that wasn't apparent, I really hope it is now, because it's egregious. It's egregious.
Those the weird amount of services that do things like, say, force a person to sign over and forfeit their soul become legally binding?
If the Supreme Court decides in favor of this cop,
We need to make our own social platform with like a mile deep book of EULA.
Hold on, let me finish. If they decide in favor of this cop, maybe not.
Huh. So if they decide in favor of the police officer, there's a precedent that
if you have your access, not a term of service. Right. If you have your level of access, then if you violate the terms of service, whatever, it's not a crime. It's not a violation of the Computer Fraud and Abuse Act.
All right, so that particular federal statute won't apply to your actions. Are there others that could get you for that?
Maybe. Depends on what you do. Depends on, you know, how deep somebody wants to get you. Because, I mean, there's so many laws on the books now, you can't really go a day without committing a federal crime.
Like, that was the whole premise of Human Centipede in South Park. When they signed away their right to be free and were captured by Steve Jobs and forced to become part of a human centipede. Then they stapled an iPad to their face and were done. You signed it, you agreed, and you gave us permission to do this. That's what I want to see become legal, because then society starts being owned by the corporations that are already in place.
There's actually...
Sorry?
I was going to say there's a graphic novel that a friend of mine made, it's called the iTunes Terms of Services or Conditions or something, and it was all in graphic novel form with the different comic styles just to like let you read the terms of service without being bored by them, and he would perform this live.
That sounds like some great art.
I think... Anything to keep someone like knowing what they're getting into.
But nobody knows. They just flirt. They breeze right past it.
Yeah, that's why he made a graphic novel about it.
Yeah. Actually, I would adapt that to an animated film. Do it like they did Night of the Living Dead, recreated, which was different animators taking like 5-10 minutes of the film and doing it in their own style.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
I like that idea. But this other one, that's... Nope. Hey, looks like we got a new...
We've been joined by Tom Ditto, a.k.a. Zero LeFou. Say hello for us.
Tom, do you seem to be...
He does not want to say hello to us. His microphone is broken.
He's miming.
Well, we have... He's here in spirit. We can see what he's doing, and... hey, Tom, how you doing?
Boring. You can translate it.
I think we heard him tapping his mic.
Does he know sign language?
Yeah.
No. Almost. Doesn't matter. We don't have an interpreter anyway. Well, we're saying hi to people that are sort of here. We're missing Ben tonight. He's home, not feeling too well, or the family's not feeling too well tonight. So we're thinking about you, man. Hope everybody does better.
Yeah.
Hope it's all good.
Yep. Several not people right. doing their thing.
Well, maybe
Mr. Conductor,
microphone.
What do you?
What
Mr.
do I
Conductor,
want?
Yeah, what do you have to bring up? What do you bring to the table here?
My charming personality.
Besides getting us on the air and making sure that everything works.
Yeah, I pushed the button through the day to make it all happen, but yeah. Jitsing it up, trying to get more people to video conference with me these days because I have a platform that actually works and isn't Zoom at the moment.
Yes, unsuccessfully.
What do you mean unsuccessfully?
They won't come to our gaming sessions. They won't just hang out and chat.
Nope. And that's a personal dig at our personal friends right there. They're avoiding us. You got to socialize, people, and right now you can't do it in person, so... Do it through the computer.
We have a whole group of antisocial people.
I was going to ask, what is this word socialize?
Yeah. Yeah, I
know. It's when your eyes, you share them between different people. Social eyes.
Oh, we pull them out like the Sisters of Fate or something?
Is that not a good joke? You going to boo that one? Okay, fine.
I'm just cringing a little bit.
That's a groan. I was a groaner.
Yeah, I was a groaner. if you were in improv, you'd have to personally stop the show and apologize to the audience.
Yeah,
but we're not in improv.
Well, we sort of are, but not. Thankfully, we're not actually on stage in front of anyone.
All right.
All right, let's see. In science news, I see we got the Chang'e 5 probe made a landing. So not the Chang'e 5, but its probe made a soft landing on the moon. China's going places. Apparently, they cut off the transmission of the landing just beforehand because they...
Just in case.
But then after a smooth landing was conducted, they took the released the video, so... No, it's
very serious there, you know. I hear it's very serious about saving face. The value of saving face.
Yes, that's very big. That's why we lie to and allow our citizens to die. That's very important. Anyway, it landed, and I believe it's taken a sample. What's that?
It ascended.
It has ascended.
Yes, at 10 a.m. today. Wait, yeah, 10 a.m. today. It ascended from Oceanus Procellarum. Sorry for my Latin. I don't know it.
It did make a collection, right? So we're going to really increase the number of moon rocks we have to play with.
Yeah, so we'll have the first fresh lunar samples since,
The 70s?
Yeah, 1976. I don't know about fresh. Can you really consider 4-billion-year-old rocks fresh?
When there's no bacteria that we know of, there's no oxygen or anything for bacteria to grow on, it's got to be pretty, like, a lot fresher than here in the United States. If there's no tectonic plates or anything like that, or subduction, it's just sitting there.
It was a joke, guys.
Contaminated with human fecal matter.
But, you know, we don't touch these rocks anyway. They're touched through a...
No, in
the glass.
That living sample will evolve into something that will come back to haunt us, mark my words.
Very nice.
They said that in the 70s.
Speaking of other things that go up into space, we've got OneWeb.
Yeah.
Great. More satellites. More cube satellites.
These aren't cube satellites. These are bigger than Starlink satellites, actually.
Are they?
Yep. They're biggies.
They're very cube-shaped, though, I must
say. They're like refrigerators, I think.
See, they've previously launched 74 satellites into low Earth orbit and plan to launch
36 more. So after coming out of bankruptcy...
Yeah.
Hey, bankruptcy is a way of life. Just ask our former president.
So...
Yeah.
I'm just imagining a horrible pinball game up there. We just had a near miss, a near hit of space debris.
The ISS?
With just satellites. Oh. A dead satellite hitting another thing. Shouldn't we, like, be cleaning things up before sending anything else up there?
Nah, don't worry about it. It's gonna fix itself. Every day I'm watching, like, near-Earth objects show up, and I'm kind of wondering, what are these objects that's, like, you know, 300 meters wide, that's going to have enough gravitational pull as it swings on through to throw a whole swath of satellites just a little bit off of their orbit. And if they can't all be corrected quickly, that could be catastrophic. Just saying. Most people don't consider that possibility day to day.
What I don't understand is, how do they expect to do asteroid mining at any point in the future?
That's ridiculous.
What is ridiculous? Mining an asteroid?
Yeah, like, you can do it, but it's so not cost effective that, like, it won't be cost effective for a couple of generations, probably.
Okay, but in a couple of generations, you know, we'll still have a halo of junk surrounding the planet. How are you going to send anything up there?
Aren't there already, like, 2-3% of SpaceX's satellites up there just not working at all?
They were reporting a failure rate of about 3%, which is horrendous for how many satellites they plan to put up there.
And that can really get in the way of future launches.
Nah, there's already a giant cloud of garbage floating around, and we have to track all the little pieces to make sure that we're cutting through. I mean,
eventually... I read something. There is some group out there that's trying to, you know, clean up a little bit, but of course they're underfunded, and, you know, yeah.
Well, we're never going to have a space elevator.
No.
It's not going to happen.
Not physically possible either until we, like, figure out some new super materials.
Even if we did, you know, there's so much junk up there. It's going to collide with it right off the bat.
Well, you see, we just recycle that garbage into the elevator. All right, everybody, you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC, Accra, Hudson, Catskill, radio for open ears.
Just this is the thing, huh?
But yeah, space garbage.
Oh, do we have a Weird Al song?
Okay, as long as
I just
want to make sure that we were done with the space garbage topic.
I think we are well established that there's a bunch of space junk.
All right, well, going from junk to gold, here is Like a Surgeon from Weird Al.
Somehow I made it through. I'm just an intern, I still make a mistake or two. I was last in my class, barely passed at the institute. Now I'm trying to avoid, a malpractice suit. Hey, like a surgeon, cutting for the very first time. Like a surgeon, organ transplants are my line. Better give me all your gauze, nurse. This patient's fading fast. Complications have set in, don't know how long. Let me see.
All right, and we are back on the Thingularity Radio program here on 90.7 FM WGXE. And looks like we have fixed our issues with Tom's mic. How you doing, Tom?
I don't know. Is it still working? Oh, it must be. I see.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah, I see from the video.
Yes, yes, the people can hear you, Tom.
Okay. I missed the first half hour because I was YouTubing a three-hour conversation between Brian Greene and Roger Penrose. Roger Penrose is getting his Nobel Prize next week. He's going to the residence of the Swedish ambassador in London because they really can't throw this party in Stockholm right now, especially for an 8-9-year-old who's remarkably spry. Roger Penrose never fails to absolutely get my tubules going, as he has got a theory of consciousness that it deals with the interesting phenomenon where if you make an observation, you will change the quantum behavior of an object. And the way he's got it figured out is the object is changing your perception of it in a way. It's not quite that simple, but he's been working with an anesthesiologist who knocks people out, and they've found some underlying qubits in our heads. Qubits are supposed to only work when it's at absolute zero, right? I mean, near to it, because, you know, you're talking about things that otherwise would be too unstable to be computers. But the qubits in our head, of which there are countless trillions, instead of the 32 or 64 that that IBM is able to put together in a freezer, are capable of giving us consciousness, according to the theory that Roger Penrose. Now he's getting his Nobel Prize for something he wrote.
Are those qubits the source of free will?
Yeah, he thinks that there's an indeterminacy in our awareness that gives us intuition and understanding. And it started when he was a student in the 1950s, and he was introduced to Gödel's theorem about the incompleteness of any mathematical set of expressions. So you may understand why you're getting these results, but it's hard to explain how you know that unless you just have intuition about math, of which Penrose has more than all of us put together many times over. But
I have a couple questions, Tom. Number one, what work is he getting the Nobel Prize for?
So he wrote a three-page, two-and-a-half-page paper in 1964 that explained that there is indeed a singularity inside a black hole. Up till then, no one was willing to believe it. But he proved it mathematically that it's inescapable, that there is at the end of time and the end of space inside a black hole. And in this conversation with Brian Greene, he walked listeners through it again. He's been doing that one. He's been doing that act, stand-up comedian that he is, since 1964, in a 2.5-page paper. Well, he's written books. I remember seeing
It must be a pretty dense paper for having a 3-hour conversation about it. And that's probably only breaching the surface.
I don't think it's that complex. It's just that the way he did it was intuitively correct, in the same way that Gödel's saying that we just know some things are true. And
a singularity is the opposite. That's basically confirming that we have no idea what's at the center.
That's true. We don't know what it is. But now, 55 years later, he's telling us what's going to happen next, albeit we have to wait for a Google years, as he likes to refer to it. That's a 10 to the 100th years.
For what, the Hawking radiation to evaporate the black hole?
Leaving this little nodule of all that's left, which he says disappears with a pop. And at that point, I think I went over this last week or last month, there's nothing left but energy, photons.
And and the information from everything that's been absorbed.
Well, only insofar as... Now, he's not willing to tie himself to the information paradox. He says okay, information got destroyed. But what's left in the form of energy is the universe. So if you allow that hypothesis, which is the maybe the Achilles heel for his cosmology, but if you allow that there's nothing left but photons, then you can show that because a photon doesn't know anything about time except at infinity, it has no clock.
There's no time for a photon. As soon as it leaves from its perspective, it lands, whether it travels 5 minutes or like 5 million years.
More than 5 million. We're talking, you know, he says Google years.
Yeah.
That has resonance to all computer people, internet people. Google years, 10 to 100. I mean, these guys that started Google knew what a Google was. It's a very long time.
All right. Can I ask my second question now, though?
Yeah, get it in there because we're going to have to move to history in a bit. So, go on. Right.
With the consciousness thing, is he talking about the delayed choice quantum eraser experiment? Oh my lord!
I don't have an answer to that. I have not heard that those terms used.
You've not heard of that yet? It's very interesting. You should look at it. Everybody listening should look up delayed choice quantum eraser experiment.
Well, you can explain it a little bit, I'm sure, if you've looked it up.
No, I don't understand it at all.
He's the white paper guy, too.
I don't want to spend that much time on it, honestly.
Okay.
We'll do it as homework for the next show.
Yeah, Tom, exactly. That's homework.
To wrap up about the Nobel Prize winner?
Well, anyway, I recommend... If you search for Roger Penrose's YouTube videos, he was barnstorming until this pandemic. I guess starting around age 80, or maybe a year earlier, he kept showing up. He gets prizes all the time, so he shows up for those. But he just will show up and talk for an hour about the cosmology and consciousness and he shows how he developed an aesthetic, because the Penrose diagrams and Penrose triangle are just eye-poppingly beautiful. So I recommend highly that you just Penrose, Roger Penrose. He's very topical now because of the Nobel Prize, but he's been at it for long.
Wonderful.
Even awesome. I have been around.
Nice. Well, that's great. I hope everybody remembers.
Well, Mr. Conductor, you posted something that is kind of interesting.
What?
And it's sort of a bugaboo for adjunct professor Ditto here.
Still not ringing a bell.
It's that robot vacuum cleaners can be hacked to record sound.
Oh!
Even though they don't have microphones.
Yeah, that's because sound can be interpreted through a whole bunch of different ways. You can use photographs, video, laser beams.
In this case, it's laser beams.
Yeah.
Is it? Do they use the infrared on them, I think?
They use a form of LIDAR. The little robot shines a laser through the room and senses the reflections.
Yeah, that's how it maps the room. Right?
If you all remember, if you've been, you know, on this whole security paranoiac path for as long as I have, you'd know that there were government agencies that could shine a laser at your empty bag of Doritos and recover a conversation from it through a window. It didn't matter if it was through a window or not, but they could recover it from the vibrations on a bag of Doritos.
That's just high tech end. The old school way was just bouncing an infrared laser beam off of a window that you were near. Capture that on a photovoltaic, route it directly into an amplifier, and you have your audio reproduced very legibly.
Well, I'm sure nothing is, you know, perfect, but I don't think the wavelength matters from infrared to, you know, a green laser.
Oh, no, I don't. I did this in sixth grade. Infrared, green, red, just bounce the light off, capture it on a cell, and you got it. You got the voice.
But it's definitely a bugaboo for Mr. Ditto here, because he doesn't like LIDAR. He thinks it's the wrong technological path to become indebted to.
Oh, so that shouldn't be showing up on our Teslas, is what you're saying.
Well, Tesla doesn't like, or Elon Musk doesn't like LiDAR. And I don't understand why it isn't self-evident that if you have 100 vehicles all pouring pulsed lasers at each other, that there's going to be crosstalks up here, that it'll confuse the cars. They won't know which return signal is which. And yeah, all the examples that I've been made aware of are in very low density distributions of these LiDAR units. But in the case that it really takes off and everyone's got LiDAR in their car and they're in a traffic jam, I just think there's going to be a fratricide.
That's a great concept, because that applies to any form of active sensor, whether it's sonar, radar, LiDAR, anything that's sending out a beam and bouncing it off of several surfaces back to itself. It's going to be doing the same thing to others.
Well, no, that's not quite true. Once you're in a low enough frequency band, you can pack another signal on top of it. Like if you have sonar or radar,
so like a marker,
you can include an identifier because it's like a low frequency signal. But when you're dealing with light, you're right at the edge of what can be interpreted, and you're only looking for the duration of the pulse and some of its characteristic frequencies. And you can get two or three of these frequencies together in a kind of crude way, but you're not able to really encode which car is which. And even if you did, I mean, you'd be turning like everybody's cameras on and off so frequently that it wouldn't be so useful. So my approach is to use interference, which is a timed event. So I have an approach that I'll have to show to Elon Musk. Uses your windshield as the optical element.
Interesting.
You didn't know what was going on, but there's a big receiver there on the windshield.
Well, cool. Maybe that could be homework for another show, too. Because right now we're going to move on to history with Corey. What you got for God?
All righty. Okay. December 1st, 1878, Rutherford B. Hayes became the first U.S. president to use the telephone after Alexander Graham Bell installed one in the White House. December 2nd, 1942, in a lab at the University of Chicago, Enrico Fermi and his team achieved the first artificial nuclear chain reaction. 1970, almost a year after Nixon signed the Bipartisan National Environmental Policy Act, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency was established. December 3rd, 1872, cuneiform tablets of the Chaldean account of the deluge, the 11th in the Epic of Gilgamesh and older than the account in the Bible, were translated for the Society of Biblical Archaeology in London. 1922, the Rialto Theater in New York City premiered the first successful Technicolor film, The Toll of the Sea.
22.
December 5th, 1952. December 5th, 1952, a four-day smog caused by coal burn in the Senate on London, causing at least 4,000 deaths. This led to their adoption of the Clean Air Act 4 years later.
Coal and probably peat moss as well.
And it only took a whole bunch of dead people to get it.
It took till 1854 just to get a sewer.
Oh, yeah. 1969, several months after initial tests at UCLA and Stanford, ARPANET added UC Santa Barbara and the University of Utah to the network that would evolve into the internet.
It was so tiny back then.
Hooray. Look what
so
it's turned
tiny,
into.
So innocent.
Imagine if we had all information at our fingertips, what we could accomplish.
Welcome to 2020.
Oh, man.
December 6, 1877, Thomas Edison demonstrated the first sound recording reciting Mary Had a Little Lamb at his Menlo Park laboratory.
Of course, it wasn't the first sound recording, but it was the first sound recording that could be played back.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I think I've gone over that in some other history segments. Mm-hmm. 1957, the U.S.'s first attempt to put a satellite in orbit failed when the rocket carrying it exploded on the Cape Canaveral launch pad.
Vanguard.
And going back to something we talked about earlier, December 7th, 1972, Apollo 17, the sixth and last U.S. moon mission, launched from Cape Canaveral. Flight Commander Eugene Seaman would be the last man on the moon for right now. December 8th, 1993, the U.S. Secretary of Defense announced the 24-satellite global positioning system was now available for civilian use.
Whoa, and now we have people driving into lost parts of the woods because that's the telling them to.
December 10th, 1984, the National Science Foundation reported the discovery of the first extrasolar planet orbiting a star 21 million light years from Earth. December 11th, 1911, Marie Curie became the first person to win a second Nobel Prize. And December 12th, 1901, Galileo Marconi sent the first transatlantic radio signal from Cornwall to St. John's, Newfoundland. December 15th, 1612, Simon Marius was the first to observe the Andromeda galaxy through a telescope. December 17th, 1903, in the wood and fabric biplane, the Flyer, the Wright brothers made the first man-powered and sustained airplane flight at Kitty Hawk.
Leading to the airline industry of today. Again, we had no idea what they were doing to people.
Oh.
Sorry.
That's all right. December 18th, 1888, the Anasazi Cliff Palace in Mesa Verde, Colorado was discovered by a rancher while he searched for missing cattle. 1926, G.N. Lewis coined the word photon in a letter published in Nature. Let's see. December 19th, Frederick Walton applied for a patent on his invention of linoleum, designed as a replacement for the typical floor covering of oiled cloth. 1974, the Altair 8800 microcomputer kit went on sale in the U.S. for $397.
People went nuts for a box with lights and switches. Yeah. There was no GUI.
It was a kit. And it had
no Wi-Fi, no anything.
Every card had its own power supply.
Adjusted for inflation, it would cost $2,096 today.
Oh.
That's why only geeks got it.
Mm-hmm.
Real deep ones.
December 23rd, 1953, Robert Oppenheimer was informed his security clearance had been suspended due to allegations of past communist association.
The only person on the entire crew with a conscience.
Robert Keller took over from him and made the hydrogen bomb.
1993, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control announced a reversal of plans to destroy their smallpox virus stockpile due to protests from scientists who wanted to continue research.
Oh, what? They were going to destroy it, and then they...
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, they can make it now from scratch because they have the genetic code.
Yeah.
Fun!
December 24th, the first known entertainment broadcast on radio was given by Reginald A. Fessenden to promote a system using his new alternator transmitter. Excuse me. December 25th, 1758. Amateur astronomer Johann George Palitz first sighted the predicted return of Halley's Comet. 1999, the crew of the Space Shuttle Discovery completed maintenance on the Hubble Space Telescope, installing corrective optics to fix a design flaw in the mirror.
Mike broke the Hubble.
December 26, 1906, Story of the Kelly Gang, the first full-length feature film predating Birth of a Nation by over a decade, was presented in Melbourne, Australia. Only 10 minutes survive to this day.
Acetate.
Exactly.
Acetate.
1982, Time Magazine gave its Man of the Year to a non-human for the first time, naming the computer as that year's greatest influence for good or evil. How little did they know they were right. December 29th, 1987, cosmonaut Yuri Romanenko returned to Earth, ending his record 326-day orbit aboard the Mir. 1997, Hong Kong began killing their entire chicken population, up to 1.4 million, to stem the spread of an avian flu that had already killed four people. December 31st, 1938, the first breath test for car drivers, the drunkometer, was invented by Dr. Rolla N. Harger.
The drunkometer.
It's a scientific name. There's nothing wrong with it.
Perfectly valid name.
Perfectly cromulent. I did learn why there's no Google Street View in Germany. I guess when you were talking about the GPS.
And that blanket protects them.
Just these information privacy laws that they have in Germany that they apparently have because first the Nazis could arrest you basically for thought crimes, and then after that, while half of Germany was in communist occupation, again, similar kind of intrusive into your life, wanting every bit of information on you, and so Germany is now very stay out of everybody's personal business. So a lot of people, by the time Google Street View came into Germany, people were automatically opting out. There was like an opt out before opt in thing. Here in the United States, you're automatically opted into Street View until you opt out. So you can opt out, but you aren't asked if you can be in Google Street View here. There they had to ask permission and people were like, no, I don't want people knowing what my house looks like.
That would be fun, having to get permission for everybody. But that's kind of the way it should be.
Good but they have, they have laws.
They have laws that care about their citizens.
They have a democratic society of ruled by laws and actual, you know, for the common welfare of all.
They had to have Nazis and communists first to scare them into it, I think. I don't know.
Well, maybe it's time for us to learn, too.
What's our excuse? We fought them.
Well, we fought them, and now we've become them.
That's what I was going to say. We have to become them to really learn.
American hubris.
To close us out, I like to bring up something a little bit, you know, on the brighter side. It's not all doom and gloom here at the reptilian replacement facility. Thank you, Brian, for posting this. Europe plans a space claw to capture orbiting junk. Yeah, they just their space agency finalized a contract to launch a mission in 2025 that will be the first one to dispose of orbiting space junk. It'll be built by a Swiss startup called ClearSpace, and as part of its mission, it will home in on a piece of debris the size of a washing machine.
Okay.
But no smaller?
What?
Okay, it's a start. It's a start.
What's the cost of this mission?
How big do they get? I don't know.
Well, how small do they get? I mean, something the size of a bolt could just punch a hole through a space station or something. Or
traveling at, like, you know, like 20 meters per second. Speeds like that. They could, like, cause damage, but they're also being tracked. Most of the smaller stuff is in lower orbits, like CubeSats and stuff like that, and will naturally decay because we kind of got our business in order that way. But there are bigger satellites that are farther out in the bigger orbits. I'm just curious what that satellite like is capable of. Can it deorbit several other satellites, or can it only
particular mission?
Yeah.
As far as I know, it's currently only going for a single piece of, you know, washing machine-sized stuff.
That's a ridiculous waste of money.
Well, there's other EU-funded missions. There's one called Remove Debris, and it's designed by the University of Surrey. And it flew in 2018 and tested a harpoon and a net on small targets.
Cody, I'm sorry. Let me just break in and let everybody know that's listening that the show is coming to an end very soon. We will be extending into an after-hours show. You have to go to the website, wgxe.org. If you want to keep listening to us, we will continue a couple of these conversations. But that is us bringing the actual broadcast show to a close. You've been listening to the Thingulady Radio program from the Catskill Maker Syndicate at the Reptilian Cloning Facility / Canadian Snow Storage. We know what they are doing and what they will be bringing. Bear upon us. We blame the Canadians. Don't trust a goose. All right. This has been Jill, Tom, Corey, and Cody, and me, Mr. Conductor, saying have a good night. Hope everybody is safe out there. Take care.
Remember, there is no such thing as a failed experiment. Come back to the website and catch us all on the after show. And we'll play them out.